from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? Sing a song for the
broken hearted. Mills at quarterback. Ogunbowale is the running back. Chiefs with four in the secondary. Second down, goal at the 8. Touchdown. Quatoriano makes the grab. The rookie out of Oregon State. With the second down and 10. Blocked by Freeman. Blocked by Tensel. Messy pocket. There he goes. Mills on the run. Room to roam. And touchdown. 17-yard touchdown run by quarterback Davis Mills. Tensel a block. Mills. Caught. Flag. Touchdown. Aiken. Working on Willie Gay. Let's see what the flag is all about. Two tight ends. Freeman in the backfield. And that's caught on a dive by Rogers. Orton was back there. Got to the 20. Picked up 14 yards. Good throw. Davis Mills. Sounds in the hold. Winchester to snap. 51 yards for the lead. No good. They need about 20 yards, the Texans do, to get in field goal range, but you can see they're going to go to an E and take it to OT.
Quarterback Davis Mills had his best game as a Houston Texan, by the way. I love Kevin Harlan. Love He's Kevin awesome. Harlan. Didn't think he had his A game yesterday. That's okay. It's the Texans. Nobody had their A game when they're going up against the Texans, or they're calling the Houston Texans.
He got really excited on the fumble.
Yeah. I love how he said quarterback Davis Mills, because when you say a position, it's a crutch because you don't know the player.
I was going to say, what if we did, was it Freaky Friday or like Trading Places Part 2, where we had one tight end play quarterback, and then we had one quarterback play tight end just to see if they might be better at another position. Because Davis Mills at tight end, I might consider, or at least see what he could do.
I can't deal with this. I don't know if you guys 3 minutes in and you're saying hot takes like that?
You know, I don't mean it, but I mean, it's better than him playing quarterback half a game.
I don't know if it's better.
Half a game.
But it can't be good.
Half a game.
He didn't play much. What were you saying, Brendan?
I don't know if you guys caught it in that little montage there, but there is a moment where he says, Davis Mills in at quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because you have to, I mean, maybe you don't have to, but like, yeah, no, you wouldn't say that for any other team.
Jeff Driscoll was wearing the blue sleeves and Davis Mills was wearing the white sleeves. That was how you could tell the difference between those two guys yesterday that had similar snap shares again, although Davis played most of the second half. Anyways, the Texans yesterday, another almost. I was shocked that they were in this game. I'm not going to lie. We know the spread. The Texans have covered the spread back-to-back weeks against what Lovie Smith would call Super Bowl contenders, because he called the Cowboys a Super Bowl contender last week, and if he called the Cowboys a Super Bowl contender last week, you have to call the Kansas City Chiefs a Super Bowl contender this week. What does it say, Blankers, that for back-to-back weekends, you've had very close games against, I'm not going to go as far as Lovie and say Super Bowl contenders, but you have back-to-back games against at least one Super Bowl contender and another team who will be in the playoffs in the NFC.
That would be an in-state rivalry that people love when you play against in the Cowboys. I think that it says absolutely nothing. It says that, once again, much like your team and your season and your last 2 years and your roster, you're still not very good, because a win against either one of these teams would have elevated your fan base into a more encouraging position. It might have elevated the reputation of your head coach to where he might be in a better position going into the offseason. And it would have given everybody hope that, hey, there's a small glimmer of sparkling light at the end of the tunnel, and it might get brighter throughout the offseason as we go forward, but this is something to build on. But again, because you didn't get either one, you get absolutely nothing. And the way you went about not getting either one just gives more fuel and more fodder to more people to say exactly what I was just saying on the opposite, and say, you need a new coach, you're not there yet, you're absolutely terrible, and this is just awful to watch.
I'll be honest with you, it puts fear into my heart a little bit that the Houston Texans might see this as like progress and be like, you know what, Lovie, we don't want to fire two head coaches in back-to-back years. We're going to bring you back for a second season. So actually, it strikes fear in my heart that the Astros have played, or the Astros, the Texans have played back-to-back close games and back-to-back weeks. Because I think both of them are also fool's gold. I don't think either game should have been close. If you go back last week against the Cowboys gift-wrapped it, the opportunity for you to be close in that game. Cowboys didn't show up. And maybe the Cowboys aren't that good. They also blew a lead against Jacksonville yesterday. Kansas City, I do think, is good. Kansas City, I think, is one of, if not the best team in the AFC. But they also, I don't feel like they showed up. And they also gift-wrapped that game to where the Texans could be in it. Whether it was the turnovers, whether it was the lack of converting on third down. They allowed the Houston Texans to be in that game more than it was the Houston Texans showing this great sign of progress. If you look at the yards gained in this game, Kansas City gained 502 yards. Okay, you think a game goes into overtime, 30-24. You know it's close, right? It went to overtime. You have the same amount of points as the other team at the end of regulation. If I told you that Kansas City had 502 yards and you didn't already know how many yards the Texans had, how many would you think they had? Probably pretty close, right? They got to be somewhat competitive.
Well, if you knew the score, then you knew that they would have had to have probably pushing around 350 to 400 yards.
219 total yards for the Houston Texans yesterday. That game was not close. It was close in score alone. And the reason that it was close in score alone was because Kansas City kept you in the game. So this whole, like, the Texans have been close. I understand that they have when you look at the final score. If you watch that game down for down, if you watch the Dallas game down for down, the Texans really had no business being in either one of those games. But I am scared that Nick Caserio, and maybe even to a more, like, you know, higher power, Cal McNair is going to look at that, looking for a reason to keep Lovie Smith, and be like, look right here. We have our team that's right there against the Cowboys. Our team is just a play away from beating the Kansas City Chiefs, but they're not really seeing the game in context. They're not really reading the game as you should be reading it. You get outgained by almost 300 yards, you do not belong on the same football field as that team.
See, but I think, Jeremy, that there's too many people that look at just the score and say, the Texans were in the game. They're not going to take the deep enough dive, even though it's really not that deep. They're not going to delve into the box score and realize this was still extremely one-sided. And even though the score didn't indicate it for most of the game, this was unlike the Cowboy game, a game dominated by the team that did end up winning in overtime. But I think that most fans and most casuals, including probably Cal McNair, because he was spending half the time at the buffet in his suite, probably looked at the scoreboard and went, hey, well, I think that we're in this game, and I think that Nick and Lovey must be doing an outstandingly, aggressively awesome job. And I think that could be problem for you, because I think that when the more you look at it and realize they didn't get what you were fearful of, right? They didn't get a win. But I think a lot of casuals and a lot of people sometimes that may even matter too much, like Cal, might look at it and go, hey, these last 2 weeks, look at all the encouraging things. Look at how close we were. This is fantastic when it's not.
Yeah, to me, honestly, it does strike some fear into me. I wanted to play that Andy Reid sound here in a second, Brendan. But what does it mean to you, Hive? 713-780-ESPN. Do the back-to-back very close games against good teams mean something for the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776. I don't think they mean a darn thing. I really don't. I think Kansas City and Dallas were both coasting. I think if you dive into how the games were played, and much more, I think, in the Kansas City game than the Dallas game, like the Texans, I think, did more good things in the Dallas game than they did in the Kansas City game yesterday. I felt like they played better in the Dallas game than they did in the Kansas City game yesterday. But they were in both games. We know that. Whenever you get outgained by nearly 300 yards, you don't belong on the same field, and the other team kept you in the game. You don't win football games with 219 total yards. You just don't do it. And you don't win football games by giving up over 500 total yards. So if you think that game was close yesterday, you're fooling yourself. And I'm scared that Cal McNair is going to be fooling himself and just thinking the Texans are suddenly competitive and progressing and building this winning team like Lovie Smith would tell you that they're doing. And they're not. Here was Andy Reid yesterday advocating for the Texans to keep Lovie Smith. And it, again, it terrifies me.
Listen, it was a weird game. My hat goes off to Lovie for the great job in which he's done here. I mean, you've seen it the last 2 weeks. It's a hard job, and it takes time as a head coach. And Lovey, my word of advice is just give him time. He's a tremendous football coach. I've had a chance to compete against him for a number of years, and just rock solid football team.
Look, it's no secret that coaches are going to advocate for the profession, whether it's Andy Reid here, whether it was Herm Edwards on the bench last week.
It's Van Gundyism. I mean, it's a fraternity.
Exactly. They're going to advocate for the profession. They're going to be trying to keep other coaches around the league, especially ones that they like. They want to keep them employed. Andy Reid doesn't care about the best interest of the Houston Texans. He doesn't care what the Houston Texans, like if they fired Lovie Smith, who they hire. In fact, he's probably going to hope that they hire somebody bad. That way they have no competition, not to say that the Texans are anywhere near the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think it was on display yesterday, even though the Texans lost in overtime. They got outgained by nearly 300
yards. But also, Jeremy, what else is he going to say to make himself look better? Look, if that's a rock-solid football team with a really good football coach, then it doesn't look as embarrassing that you needed overtime to beat them.
Maybe to an extent. But they're still 1-12-1.
You're right. I know, but you know what he's trying to do there, right? He's trying to manipulate the crowd, work the crowd a little bit, and say, hey, look, that wasn't a slouch over there. They played their butt. That's a rock-solid football team and a really good football coach. They played their tails off today. He's giving Lovey his props, and at the same time, indirectly, he's kind of covering his own ass a little bit, saying that team played really hard.
Yeah, and probably. I think the bigger point, though, is that he's advocating for Lovey. Like, give him time. You got to give him time. It's hard to rebuild in the NFL. Look how close the Texans were to beating us today. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. How many games in the NFL can you win if you barely gain over 200 yards and you're giving up 500 yards? The final score is deceiving for the second week in a row, and I'm scared that decision makers over at Kirby are going to look at these back-to-back weeks and try to sell themselves in the idea of not moving on from Lovie Smith, even though Lovie Smith is the head coach of a one-win team. Lovie Smith is calling plays for one of the worst defenses in the NFL, and he got promoted a year after calling defensive plays for one of the worst defenses in the NFL. These back-to-back very close games against, I use the word Super Bowl contenders very loosely, at least one Super Bowl contender and one playoff team. Do these back-to-back very close games mean something to you? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are these back-to-back close games? Do they mean something? 713-780-ESPN. Do they mean anything for you? 713-780-3776. To me, it strikes fear into my heart. It really does. Because I think that the Texans need a new head coach. I want it to be Ben Johnson, offensive coordinator for Detroit. Especially if you go quarterback. Like, if you draft a quarterback in the first round, how do you sell the idea of Lovie Smith and then some random offensive coordinator? I don't understand that sell. Like, I think it's talking out of both sides of your mouth to keep Lovie and one quarterback in the first. I really do.
You said how. The only way that you could possibly even try to attempt this is whoever you lure in to be your offensive coordinator with a really forward-thinking, innovative offensive mind is to basically say, it's not if, it's when we move on from Lovey or he moves on. The job will be yours, and we will hand it to you. And you have to do that with kid gloves on and tiptoe around a lot of things with the Rooney Rule and other things and all the different things you got to do with the interview process and all the things that go with it. But that, you ask the question, and the only way that I can answer that and say that there is a method to that madness would be to promise someone that when the time comes, it's yours.
I think it's plausible. I don't think it's like very probable. Because, like, one, the offense coordinator can't be a current offense coordinator because he's not going to leave for a lateral job, especially one of the worst offenses currently in the NFL. Now, there would be intrigue of drafting a quarterback one. And then it also, like, you have to have a certain feel that it's probably a lame duck staff. Like, how much longer is Lovie Smith going? Now, you have, like, they promised you the head coaching job?
Well.
But, I mean, you got to be successful. They're not going to do it if your offense is 30th.
No, that's what I was going to say. But here's the other thing, Jeremy. You know, and you know, again, we talked about in the first segment, coaching fraternities. You don't try and take a job of a guy that is still currently in the job and all these different things where you try and give them their props and their love because you don't want to get them, be the part of the reason why they got fired. The other thing is, we've seen this in all the major sports, in college too, where you go to them and you say, hey, you can stay, but you're going to have to make changes to your staff. A lot of guys say, well, then I'm out because I won't do that and I'm loyal to my guys who I hired and I won't be the guy that also fires them while I stay. And it's a very fine line. But some owners also know that, and that's the reason why they give them the opportunity to stay but make changes, because they know they won't. So I think that most of this staff should already be lame duck and very aware of the fact they should be looking for work starting the minute that they play their last game this season. But I don't know how hard of a hammer is going to be dropped down on everybody after the season.
Cal might be selling the idea. Look at us. We're getting better. We're getting better. We're almost winning when teams aren't trying and they're outgaining us by 300 yards. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. Chad, you're in the hive for the Killer Bees. What's up, Chad?
Yeah, guys. I just don't see anything positive coming out of Houston. Yeah, guys, I just don't see anything really positive coming from those last two games, really. Honestly, I think Dallas and KC play down the teams like that.
I think so. I think so. Yeah, appreciate the call, Chad.
Can I start that answer? Yeah, guys, I just don't see anything positive coming out of Houston either. But there, you can have it.
I think it was a I think he had it on loop. I think he might have recorded the call, recorded the question, and hit play, and then it's like, oh, I'm not sure if I hit it. Let me start it over again, and then started it over. Look, there's a lot of positives coming out of Houston. Killer Bees, the Houston Cougar basketball
Killer
team,
Bee.
The entire program. Killer Bees. The Houston Astros are very, very good.
Killer Bees.
But when it comes to the Houston Texans, like to his point, we heard Chad's point there, is that like the last two games, people were trying hard to make it a positive. Now, maybe not the fans, but Lovie Smith is trying to sell you the idea. Look how close we are. Look how we're building. Look how we're getting there. Andy Reid, again, like kind of echoing Lovie Smith, too. Look at them building. Look how close they are to us, a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. I am worried. I am scared that the decision makers, whether it's Cal, whether it's Nick Caserio, and because they don't want to fire another head coach, whether it's the payroll, whether it's paying another head coach, whether it's the second minority coach in back-to-back years, I think that they would love the idea of being able to sell the idea of bringing Lovie Smith back. And if you're using the last two games as the rationale, that's going to be hard for me to support. Even though they went to OT against Kansas City, they outgained you by nearly 300 yards.
You used a tag team quarterback approach for both games.
That's the other part of it, too. Like, you can make the case that the coaching staff did a decent job of, like, patching together the island of misfit toys and had them, like, fighting really, really hard. None of these dudes are the future. Like, Jalen Petrie,
that's
like, there's a
say.
Few of them. There's a few of them. I don't want to go all the way and say that because Christian Harris had a heck of a game yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Jalen Petrie's been very good. I like the tackles, even though one of them wasn't playing tackle yesterday, and Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard. I think they need to book in the offensive
Pierce
line.
Didn't play. You didn't have a quarterback, neither receiver that you expected to be a part of your receiving core in the future and for this season didn't play, and Collins and Cooks and Brandon Cook. You look at all across the line, and if that's the way you won the two games and that's the reason why the coaching staff stays, then you might as well say the guys that contributed to being in both those games can stay too, and then you basically should just admit you suck and you like sucking.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like they were in the game with a bunch of island of misfit toys. Some foundational pieces, but not many.
But here's the other thing I was going to say to the caller's point as well. You could say that if you were the Denver Broncos. I don't see any positives coming for a long time if I'm the Denver Broncos, because you gave up a bunch of young talent and prospects, draft capital, to get a guy that you then extended so that you're stuck with him for even longer, and then you realized after the fact how bad he really was and how much he sucks. And now you're stuck and the cupboard's really starting to look bare, as opposed to the Texans, who got rid of their franchise quarterback, got a nice haul for him, because they suck, are going to get a ton of good draft picks, and there's a lot to be excited about in terms of it may not happen overnight, but there is a plan and a path to getting better.
On the surface, it is understandable how somebody can look at the last two games and say, this is a sign of good things, right? Like, I think you guys, this could be a different show. The Texans could have played games where you felt their young pieces kept them in it with Dallas and Kansas City. And I think we could be sitting here saying, this is a great sign. It's just not, like, if you dig any deeper than the absolute surface, it's just not the real story.
Yeah, a bunch of veterans that probably won't be on the team next year are what kept you in that game. 7-1 and the Chiefs. The Chiefs kept you in that game. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Back there now for Mike. Mike, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. Hopefully I'll bring it a little bit better than Chad. You kind of touched a little bit on what my thought process is, are these guys that are playing your future? That's the question that we have to ask Lovie Smith. Is Lovie Smith the future? Absolutely not. So now that you've got this, for the first time, we haven't had draft picks. You've got the first round pick. You've got a bunch of picks coming. That, to me, is when you want to put the guy in that's your future so that he can start working with the future players at the same time and develop them up properly. Lovie's not the future. And what we saw, not only in the last two games, but the previous games, even in a close game, what killed us? Mental mistakes, things that they should not be doing, penalties, fumbles, all of these things. Get, you know, I love Lovie Smith. Mm-hmm. I've always been a huge fan. But he's not your future. Yeah, to move to your future with all of these future players.
I think it's a good way to sum it up. Because I like Lovie, too. I think Lovie's solid.
Yep.
I don't think Lovie was the best hire, and the Texans didn't want to hire him last year. His
I think
resume,
in terms of character of the coaches that have been hired around in this town, I don't think there's a bad thing to be said. I think that in terms of the results that in a results-driven business and the way they go about it is where you can poke holes.
Yeah, and I think it's fair, too, like if you were to defend Lovie a little bit, say that the cupboard's bare, that he's playing chess with a bunch of pawns, that's 100% true. But like Mike said, it's not the future. And like I honestly think, too, that Lovie having a short-sighted vision was evident yesterday, and I don't think Nick Caserio, at least if I'm Nick Caserio, Nick Caserio didn't say any of this, he hasn't talked, but if I'm Nick Caserio, I wouldn't be too pleased with the short-sighted view that Lovie showed yesterday. Yesterday, Lovie showed some short-sighted view. Whether, like, you can even make the case the whole two-quarterback system's a bit short-sighted, trying to win that one game when you already had a playoff contention, you have one win. But the whole Titus Howard thing, that is short-sighted.
Crazy.
Yep. Like, does he give him the best chance to win yesterday? Sure, I'll concede that point.
Yep.
But who cares?
Right.
The development of Titus is so much more important than if you can upset the Kansas City Chiefs.
Look, I go back to two different points. One, because we try and set this up for you so that you can look smarter and have better conversations before the season even started. But we said, and what was I harping on all offseason? This year, let's not play musical chairs with our offensive linemen. Let's find a spot and a home for the starting five and keep them there. And keep them there, especially in the case of a guy whose contract is coming up, so you can figure out if he truly is worth the money and you want to keep him around. But yet, now you're trying to win a football game when you're one and god-awful and suddenly think that it's the best move to do when you're putting in a guy in like a bad deja vu situation he's already been in that you shouldn't want to do. So that's the thing that really drives me nuts is the fact that that was okay. I don't understand that. And the other thing that we paved the way for, and we couldn't predict what the Texans were going to do, but when we were at absolute rock bottom, and we even said, hey, look, before you even get back to like level ground, you got to dig out of the Bill O'Brien hole. But the one thing we said is you're not going to be good for about 3 to 5 years. You need a bridge coach. Well, we didn't know that it would take two, and we didn't know that they would do the things that they did. But to the caller's point, what we really said was until you start to get good and or then later when you get your franchise quarterback, then you focus more on the coach of the future and the now when you've got your guy. Until you got your guy, you just need a bridge. Well, I didn't know the bridge came in two pieces, but they did, and it was year after year. It was Cully to Lovie, and that's what you've gotten so far. But as soon as you get that franchise quarterback, we've been adamant in telling you that's when you got to get a different head coach and offensive coordinator.
Let's sneak David in here real quick. David, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, David?
Hey, guys. Yeah, just make it real quick. I'm a Texas fan, obviously. I'm just trying to figure out, maybe y'all talked about this, and I apologize if I'm beating a dead horse. How do they spend or justify the rehire of Lovie Smith with the record he has now if they were quick to fire David Culley and the record that he had? I'm just trying to, Lovie has a history. Mm-hmm. But
David, you're thinking too logical.
A long, long time ago.
You're thinking too logical. Appreciate the call. And you're not beating a dead horse. Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. That's the logical approach. That's the way the Texans should be viewing it. That's the way they should also view their decision at the end of the year. We have seen a lot of times the Texans always aren't very logical. In fact, they're the opposite. They're illogical. So I'm looking at the Chiefs game this week, and Andy Reid, oh, yeah, give Lovie time. Lovie, we're close. We're building. We're competitive against Kansas City. Not really. I know the game went to OT, but not really. And same thing with Dallas. I'm scared that the illogic is going to step in when it comes to the Texans and go opposite of you, David, opposite of logic, and move on with, you know, another head coach is probably only going to be here for another year or two and not part of the future, to Mike's point.
Yeah, look, I mean, we know how they operate. We know a lot of times it has nothing to do with what's going on in the locker room and on the football field. It has everything to do with image, and image is everything, and perception, and a lot of other things that a lot of Texans fans don't want to be part of the conversation. But it's reality, especially in today's day and age, and that's what they're doing. They're analyzing the big picture and all of it, and that's where you can sometimes lose sight of the lack of wins and losses and a worse record than the guy that you got rid of after a year, and worry more about the fact that this would be two coaches in 2 years, both are African-American, and it's a really, really awful look.
713-780-ESPN, Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals, is next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, guys, time is running out. Now we're getting close to Christmas. Now you're almost in panic mode, and you've got to get some gifts for the significant other in your life. Well, I can save the day for you, but not for long. You got to act now. It's the Naturally Nude Pajamas, available only and exclusively at Pajamagram. And you can go to Pajamagram.com right now, and you can get them. They are naturally nude pajamas. They feel just like her soft skin. You know just by thinking about it and hearing the name that they got to look good on her too. More alluring than lingerie. The texture and the touch and the feel. So seductive. You're both going to love them. It's the gift that I keep telling you keeps on giving. You get them for her. She wears them for you. And I mean, you don't need mistletoe. Happy holidays and enjoy yourself with some time off because you're going to love these things too. And right now, if you get these naturally nude pajamas for her, they're going to throw in a naturally nude nightgown as well. A $75 savings. You get two gifts for the price of one. And here's the best part of all. They're going to do the wrapping for you for free. So you don't have to worry about trying to get that tape out in the scissors and doing a complete chop job on the packaging, which takes away from the overall presentation. They'll take care of it and they'll get it there by the holidays. So you are a winner yet again. All you need to do is get going because these orders sell out like they did last year really quickly as we get close to Christmas. You got to get on it now. Pajamagram.com. Pajamagram.com. Order the naturally nude pajamas. They're going to throw in the nightgown and everything else that I said, but do it now before it's too late. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
Clean up on aisle five.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want trash bags.
Clean it up.
It's Straight Trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
Straight Trash Homie. Blankers, would you like the honor leading us off? Straight Trash Homie, presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
Easy peasy, piece of cake. How can you not start and say this one? Fourth and one, midfield. What are you playing for? I mean, what are you worried about?
The game. You're playing to win the game.
Okay, great. You can do that too. But even with the Fighting Rex Burkhead and my boy from Wisconsin, Ogun Bawali, and someone else, and the two quarterbacks, someone could get 1 yard.
What about Royce Freeman?
I don't care. Great. Him too.
He looked good yesterday.
Go get 1 yard and go for it. Because you know what? You're not going to get crushed for that. You're one in god-awful. So if you're one in god-awful and you got a chance to get a big first down to possibly beat the Chiefs and really make a statement, do it.
It's a
You're
going to
get more criticized after the game for not doing it, which you've already lived through and should have already learned from, so that you know even when it was a lesser record for yourself and maybe there was more to lose back then and you got killed for it, go for it.
Yeah. Like I'm you're gonna make Dead Name mad. He advocates for a one win head coach all the time. It's hard for me to really get invested in down and distance situations because I don't care if the Texans win. Like I'm being honest with all of you. That's right. Where I'm at. I watch every single snap. I go back and make sure that, you know, I look at the replay of it too with the All-22. Like I watch this team in and out, and it is very hard work. I'm willing to admit it is the low point of this job currently because the Texans aren't very good. But I pull for the Texans. I want the Texans to be good. The Texans are my favorite team in the NFL. There's no secret behind that. But it's very hard with where the Texans are because I want them to lose because I think it's in the best interest of the Texans long term to lose. It is difficult for me to really get that invested with these fourth and one situations. Like the one I looked at yesterday was the at the end of the game. Like there's 8 seconds left. You're at your own 40-yard line, and you just need to score to win. And I understand you don't have any timeouts. I understand there's some risk there. Look at Raiders-Patriots. But that's a part where I think, again, you're a one-win team. Why not be aggressive there where either Davis Mills is throwing a Hail Mary, maybe you don't think his arm's good enough, but you have 8 seconds. You can throw something quick near the sideline, gain 7, 8, 9, 10 yards,
you're
and
indoors.
All of a sudden you're at the 50.
You're indoors,
too. I don't know about that.
I mean, if there was a way to – look, you wouldn't get penalized anyway or criticized if you tried, like, a 15-yard out. And you know what? Right at 1 second, he might get out of bounds, he might not. But if he does – and you're indoors with a fairly strong-legged, I won't say good, field goal kicker, but you got a shot. just at least show that you're trying to win the game and understand that, look, it's your own ass. I mean, everybody's talking about you now as much as they're talking about the quarterback and everything that's bad about this franchise. You could do a lot of good for yourself and for the franchise if you can win this game. Mm. Don't go down taking bullets because you're not trying hard enough.
You can do good for yourself. I wouldn't go as far to say good for the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I still think you got it wrapped up, but the worst record. But.
Probably. Yeah. I just thought sort of that. It's just good for Loving.
At least because from a financial situation, you're always, as a franchise, trying to make money and keep people invested. You can keep people on the fence and invested if you beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know. I think everybody in the city wants the Texans to win. Do you want or lose, I mean? Do you want the Texans to win or the Texans to lose? 713-780-3776. What's your next one?
The firestorm I started was the embrace the sucks. So, but I think that you're right. There's a lot of people that have embraced it too hard now. Look, my second one is just the complete Pep Hamilton experience. It just continues to gnaw at me more and more. It's not just the fact that he's over his head and we realize he should move on. It's the fact that the play calling and everything that he does seem to just make me want to punch through a wall when I watch this team play. Going, you know what? I understand you don't have the premier lineup to put out there to call plays for, but just over and over, the way he calls plays, it just makes me want to literally like break a hand by punching through a wall because
do you do that
it's
a lot?
So frustrating. No, I know someone that did though in a basketball situation.
Yeah.
Tad Brown once punched a hole in his living room wall because we lost to Milwaukee in November.
Yeah, I get
before
it.
The Bucks were good.
I mean, no, basketball games in November are massive. They're huge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the high stakes in November, so I can understand where Tad
Brown's
maybe
more in college than pro, but even still.
I'm trying to think of like the biggest fit of rage that I've had where I don't know. I have to think about that. 713-780-ESPN.
Mine was definitely Packer related, so yeah.
What are your straight trash homies
you
presented by
Vivian
Dumpster Rental?
The Pep stuff.
We were warning you about Pep before he ever called a play. We really were. Like, people were like gung-ho that Pep Hamilton was going to lead Davis Mills into being a top 15 quarterback. I said, hey, when this dude didn't have Andrew Luck, he got fired midseason. Just saying. He's also like a 25-30-year experience coach in the NFL. Never really has been great, like, anywhere outside of being a quarterback coach. Just saying. Here's where I'm going with straight trash, homie. And I kind of alluded to it just a moment ago. Playing Titus Howard at left guard makes absolutely no sense to me. And I had somebody talking to me on Twitter about this, a little bit of discord there. Say, well, you know, Justin McCray's banged up. He's not 100%. This gives the Texans the best chance to win. Blah, 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 blah. I'll even concede that point, that maybe it gave the Texans the best chance to win yesterday. I'll start with Justin McCray. If Justin McCray is not able to play because he's hurt, he shouldn't be on the active roster. And if he's too hurt to play, call up a left guard that can play and insert him at left guard instead of moving around Titus Howard. The investment you have into Titus Howard right now, where you've already picked up his fifth-year option, you're probably going to be looking at signing him long-term this offseason as well. Whenever you're 1-11-1, now 1-12-1, you're not messing around with your second-best offensive lineman. Say, well, he's capable of playing left guard. Gives us the best chance to beat the Chiefs. No! You take care of your second-best offensive lineman, one that you're probably going to invest big money in this offseason. You keep him at right tackle. Did it make you better yesterday? Sure. Who cares? It's not as great as the greater good of keeping Titus Howard at right tackle. And look, I don't think that there's any beef between Lovie Smith and Nick Caserio, but that move by Lovie Smith is short-sighted, where Nick Caserio as the general manager better be thinking long-sighted. And if I'm the GM, I'm not happy with that move by Lovie Smith yesterday.
No, I completely agree with you, and it's part of the reason why we discussed it prior to this segment. You look at it and you say, for what did you do that for? And it's from the fact that I said don't play musical chairs with your offensive line. But like you said, and we discussed earlier even on the show, with this guy's contract coming up, the fact you have to make a hard decision about him, you're not making a hard decision on a guy that's going to be a Swiss Army knife that can just be used in multiple positions but never focuses on being as good as he can be at one. And you're doing it at a time in the season when there's no reason to do it because there's nothing to play for. You're not on the cusp of a playoff. You're not trying to do something that they said couldn't be done or sustain winning. So why in the world would you even consider doing it and, again, make yourself look more like a laughingstock? The fact that you've gone with a two-quarterback system like a college program the last 2 weeks was one thing where you want to just start, you know, giggling into your hand and go, this is pro football. But then when you see them doing this with the record that they have and the talent that they have on the field, you're like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. The more you got rid of Jack Easterby and tried to dispel all these rumors that you're the laughingstock of the NFL, you're the laughingstock of the NFL.
And see, I can't get behind the 4th-and-1 stuff now. Now, you're 100% right. I just don't care. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. But the big picture stuff is where it drives me crazy. You want to close this out here, Mariano?
No, I'll leave it to you because I'm sitting there and I'm trying to think of what would be the next
I
on
think,
the list.
I think
of what
one
really...
that we both agreed to, and it's one that you've kind of alluded to with the Pep Hamilton thing, but I want to talk specifically about this. Can we eliminate the Driscoll cat? Like, I don't really care, again, if the Texans win or lose, but that was painful to watch yesterday. Dallas figured it out by the second half. I had buddies picking up Driscoll on to be their tight end in fantasy football. I'm like, you guys are idiots. He's going to do absolutely nothing this week because teams figure it out. The Driscoll cat and the Texans were, like, married to it. They were pod committed to it, or they continued in the second half. It did absolutely nothing. Driscoll threw for 8 yards. He ran for 8 yards. Eliminate the Driscoll cat. It should be a change-up, change of pace every two or three plays per game, max.
But the one thing that goes to my point earlier, too, which I kind of roped all into it, is we said going into this last week, don't keep doing the Driscoll cat because of the fact that teams have now seen it. It's not you're going to catch a team on their heels like you did with Dallas when they weren't expecting it. But not only did we see that, but they didn't think that the Chiefs would catch on. They thought, well, we can do this for another week. It'll be fine. They won't really expect what we're going to be. Yeah. They knew exactly what he was going to do, and they know what he can't do, and they loved every minute of him being out there.
Eliminate the Driscoll cat. I wish some other team would have picked him up last week. 713-780-ESPN. You ever have straight trash, homie? Tweet it at Joel. Pac-Man Joel. All right, coming up next with the Killer Bees, Michael Brantley is back. How do we feel about it? Contract? Is that good? We okay with the dude, late 30s, coming off shoulder surgery? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now I want to tell you about my good people at Vivia. They sponsor that segment in Straight Trash Homie. And look, they do something with trash that helps you on a daily basis. It helps you on Mondays when you can vent and talk about how bad the Texans were. But it also helps you whenever you've got something going on at your house. Maybe you're doing some renovations. Maybe you're cleaning the attic and you're cleaning the garage. Whatever you got going on where you need to take the trash out and it's a big, excessive amount, don't get your hands dirty. Go Vivia.com and they will do it for you. They take care of you every step of the way because they are the ones that can bring the 10-yard and 15-yard rollaway dumpsters. They fit beautifully into your driveway. They're not going to tick off your HOA. You're not going to lose your curb appeal. And they take care of all the details so that you don't have to. It's real simple. You schedule with them and say, I want to drop it off in the morning. I want you guys to pick it up at 7 o'clock at night. I want to make sure it's in and out and no one in my neighborhood has to see that we're doing a lot of work. You don't have to worry about anything once you go Vivia.com because they have five-star service. They're going to do what you want them to do. Their dumpsters look good in your driveway, but look even better when they stay on schedule, drop them off, and pick them up whenever you need it done. And you know what? It's not just for residential customers. It can be for contractors as well. And Texas Custom Patios is one of the many contractors that goes to Vivia when they need their dumpster needs and their trash taken care of. That's another reason why you should too. It's GOVAVIA.com. GoVivia.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Michael Brantley is back. What letter grade does the Michael Brantley move mean for the Houston Astros? Off, just kidding. Anyways, the Astros reportedly agreeing to a deal with Michael Brantley. It wouldn't shock me, Blankers, if the Astros have had this deal, kind of a handshake, wink, wink agreement for a while now, because the Astros have kind of went silent on free agency, and I think it's because they might have had that handshake agreement with Michael Brantley. But what did you think of the move whenever you heard it reported over the weekend, $12 million 1 year for the Astros left fielder slash DH?
I liked it. I think to your point and something that we talked about when we always interjected, hey, with all the guys that are still out there, let's not forget that Uncle Mike is a guy that gave a speech in the playoffs that meant something, that likes to be here, that said he wants to stay here. The biggest caveat was, is he going to be healthy? And the fact that they put $4 million worth of incentives means it's probably based around his health and at-bats and doing certain things that probably gives more credence to the fact that this is exactly the way they were thinking all along. They could get their guy, an Astros guy, who is a very much also a fan favorite guy, but a guy that, look, when healthy, can still hit 300 and do a ton of table setting for you and do a lot of good things. And he's probably going to be cheaper than a lot of other guys that are on the market or left on the market that you were looking at. So it made a lot of sense. I like it a lot. I don't think they're done. I hope they're not done still, even though we said that was the number one priority. I mean, based on what you didn't have to pay him and what you are paying him, I think that you can look at, besides thinking about bringing back Yuli and whatever you're going to do addressing another catcher, you could still look for other things where you could spend money or improve this team. But the fact that they brought him back, I think, was the most logical solution. And after a year or so, especially if he's done or when he decides to walk away, or you after a year think it's time, you're still in a really good position to go and upgrade this team by getting another younger, better left fielder for the long haul.
I feel it's pretty unanimous across everything I've seen that everybody's really happy with this move. I wonder if there's any negative that is out there in the hive. 713-780-ESPN, because I'd be more interested in hearing from those people, because I think it's the minority. 713-780-3776. I like this move. You needed a left fielder DH. You had to get it done. What was left on the market, too, and if you want to rewind to whenever Andrew Benintendi signed his contract, I don't really want to pay Andrew Benintendi 5 years, $75 million. I don't think, like, that's the average annual value of $15 million. I don't believe that Andrew Benintendi is worth $75 million guaranteed for the next five seasons. I think he's a pretty good player. You could even say he's the same player as Michael Brantley. That's fine. But I have the same player on a one-year deal at $12 million, so you get some savings there. Now, there is some risk when it comes to Brantley, right? He's in his late 30s. He's coming off major shoulder surgery. You don't know what that response is going to be like. Even if he's 100%, you don't know if that's going to affect who he is as a player. So there's risk with Brantley.
Sure.
But there's risk with every free agent that was out there that the Astros were talking to, whether it was Benintendi, where the price was too much. Now you have a risk of giving a dude who's kind of, you know, slightly above average, a five-year deal at $75 million. There's risk there on what he does to the books. And then the Michael Conforto thing, too. People projected Conforto and Brantley to get the same contract that many people thought Conforto might sign a one-year deal. I'm hearing some rumblings now that Conforto might actually get like a three-year deal with opt-outs after year one, opt-outs after year two, the Scott Boras, Carlos Correa type deal. So like, I want no part of that either. So I'd rather take the risk of what I know in Michael Brantley, knowing the shoulder surgery, than the risk of giving Conforto a three-year deal with opt-outs, and he's coming off major shoulder surgery as well, and then also the $75 million. So I like Brantley over the other two options. I'm good with that. I'm also very intrigued what Brantley's going to do next year, if he's healthy, with the shift going away. I think Michael Brantley's going to feast, if he's healthy, with the no-shift rule coming into play next season. So I love that addition from Brantley, and that, you know, argument for Brantley as well. Now, one thing that I think you look at, too, is the money situation of this. I think he gave you a sweetheart hometown discount, because we were talking about it last week. When we were talking about the second year, I said I want to know part of the second year. You would be willing to give it to him because you liked Brantley. Well, he just said, no, I'll go 1 year, which is perfect. It's great. It's ideal, because like you said, you can maybe go on a year-to-year basis. If Brantley shows that he's terrible, can't come off the injury, he's only in the books for one season as opposed to the two.
And don't you think that there was an internal conversation, too, about, hey, look, if you are back to your regular form, we're more than happy to talk to you in a year's time about taking care of you.
Yeah, that's up to him. Like, that's his production. That's right,
but I'm also saying I think they had a discussion because the team said, look, it's not like we're bailing on you after a year with the injury concerns and everything like that. It's not like we don't want to take care of you. We just got to see more.
Maybe. I mean, that's plausible, sure. But, like, I think Brantley really wanted to be an Astro, and he was willing to take – maybe he could have gotten more years elsewhere, but was willing to take the year here, and he certainly could have got more money because the projection for Brantley was $15 million per year. He signed for 12 for one. So like, he kind of gave you the savings of what the overspend was for Montero. Yep. So I think the contract was great. I think that the fact that you have a loyal player, Michael Brantley, back is great. If he gets 100% healthy, you have a really good hitter going, you know, a lefty that's not going to be having to face the shift. It does have some risk, and of course the risk is the shoulder surgery. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Ryan. Ryan, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? So the only thing negative that I view about it, obviously, is what are you going to get when you come back? That's the only thing. I am a Brantley guy. Just what are you going to get whenever, you know, spring training comes around? That's the only thing negative.
You mean from a health perspective? I think he means from a health perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the thing is, what we've learned, as frustrating as it's been throughout the regular season, but even as it means spring training into the start of the season, is that they're not in any hurry. And they always feel like they're in a position to be planning for the playoffs, and that's the big picture. So they're not going to rush a guy back, and they're not going to force a guy to play multiple games, and they're not going to do anything but give every guy on this roster ample rest, no matter how hot they are or what situation they're in. And so if he's not ready to play day one, okay, so what? Because That's the way Dusty manages, and that's the way this franchise approaches the regular season. Now, it may be different. They might be in a dogfight in the division. There might be a different scenario in story with injuries and otherwise. But until we see differently, we know that this is the modus operandi of this franchise and this manager, and that you don't need him at the start of April. You need him when it matters most at the end of the season. That's what they're most concerned with. That's why they re-signed him.
When he had the surgery, the recovery time was 6 months, and he had it like, I think he had it early July. So that puts him right around the new year. And Brantley also was talking, whenever he talked to the media in September, he said that he fully expects to be back in time for spring training and that he'll be 100% cleared in time for spring training activities. And we are also hearing that the Astros might have wanted to wait until March to get a look at him. So that tells me that Brantley's good to go in March.
Well,
I think Brantley will be ready to resume baseball activity when spring training starts. Now, the whole, like, is he going to start with the opening day lineup? I think your points are good. There's no sense to rush Brantley. You want Brantley healthy for the playoffs.
And I think that even if he is healthy, they're not going to push him out there every day. They might not even push him out right away. They might just say, hey, we know you're healthy, but let's make sure that as the grind of the season starts going, that you don't try to do too much too soon. If you don't have to be out there or there's a bunch of games in a row, we'll take it a day at a time. And we're not going to do anything that hinders us in October by rushing you too quickly in April. So I think they're playing it correctly. I think we're both on the same page. I think they had discussions all along with Michael Brantley and told him, hey, we want you back. Our only concern is just where the shoulder's going to be and if you're going to be able to bounce back from it. And if all signs are go, then we're happy to have you manning left field and being a part of this team.
Yeah, and the contract is $12 million for 1 year. John Heyman reported, so you don't know if John Heyman, you know, if it's right or not. Because John Heyman has a reputation of being wrong. Yeah, I mean, Siri got him. That happens to everybody. But it's also $4 million in incentive. So if what Heyman's reporting is correct, it's kind of like this perfect deal between player and team, where the team's like, look, we'll give you a baseline of $12 million, which is respectable. It's admirable. It's probably below market value, but it's good. And then if you produce to what you think you're capable of doing, all of a sudden you add $4 million to a $12 million deal. If you hit all the incentives, that's $16 million, and that's slightly more than market value. So I think it was Brantley wanting to be an Astro. I think it was the Astros wanting Michael Brantley. They got together on a contract that made sense, and now it's going to come down if this contract, like, you know, if you get a good return on investment on this contract, it's going to depend on Michael Brantley's health. Because I firmly believe if Michael Brantley is healthy, that he's going to have a great season. He's going to hit 300. He's going to get on base a lot. Might not have the most power. Might not play as much left field as he used to. It might be a 50-50 split with he and Yordan Alvarez. But if he's 100% healthy, this is the ideal left fielder that you wanted whenever you entered free agency.
Well, he sets the table because you added a previous AL MVP that's going to be at first base, that's going to have plenty, even more opportunities to knock guys in. You don't need him to have this big bopper power and even the power he's had in the past. But if he hits the gaps in the alleys, he hits 300, his OPS is really good, and it just sets the table for a healthy Alex Bregman along with Yordan and all the other guys you have in this lineup. It's a more formidable lineup. It's a better offensive team with Michael Brantley in the lineup. Offense. I didn't say defense, but it's a better offensive team with Brantley no matter where he hits and how you use him. His bat in the lineup, especially with the shift going away and the fact that you need a left-handed bat in the lineup anyway, I think he's the perfect bat in this lineup with the other guys you have on the roster.
We all wanted a left fielder that hit left-handed or left field DH, however you want to look at it. The only question is the health. There was risk there, but there was risk for all of these guys who were still out there. 713-780-ESPN. Any naysayers to this contract between the Astros and Michael Brantley? 713-780-3776. Also, are the Astros done or is there room and desire for more? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.